I have a recording here. I call it Learning Irish on the Job. Very interesting stories from Jack, who I met last week, and his wife, Eta, and grandson. Here's Jack talking, anyway, about picking up the Irish language over in Galway. You were speaking to me earlier about working as a young apprentice plumber.
Yes.
And you went to, was it Galway?
Yes.
Could you tell me a little bit about your interest in the Irish language?
I will, and I'll preface it with a little story about what was happening before that. I had worked for a Dublin plumbing contractor who had most of his work probably outside of Dublin. And of course, we used to call this country work. So we would set off on country work, and I worked in many places all around Ireland like that. And the thing about it was that we had different working conditions then, and the difference in the working conditions were this. In Dublin in the 19th century, there had been, I didn't know this at the time, but in the 19th century, there had been a 60-hour working week. Now, when we went away on country work, as we called it, this could anywhere outside the Naas Road, like was country work for the Dub, you know. When you went out there, you were on country work, so you got digs money, as we call it, and you stayed with a local landlady, usually. Maybe that's always, I should say, nearly. Then you worked 60 hours flat, so it was 8 to 7, 6 times a week, with an hour for lunch, because we usually went home at lunchtime. We'd only half an hour for lunch in Dublin, but because we just had tea and sandwiches and that we brought with us. But outside of Dublin, we went back to the landlady's digs and got middle of the day dinner from her. You know, that was the way it used to work. Now, the thing is that when we went down doing that work, I was working in Kenmare, on the Great Southern Hotel in Kenmare. I'd been working on the Great Southern Hotel in Killarney, then moved to Kenmare, was working on that. And one day I got a letter from the company I was working for in Dublin, and it was very unusual, those has to be communicated with by letter. Mind you, the phone was less usual, but there you are, it was just, the contact didn't happen like that. Anyway, I opened the letter and it said, one-liner, go to Spittle and do work as documents enclosed. The documents enclosed showed it was at least 6 months' work. Now, I was tired working these hours. I'd been in an athletic club in Dublin when I'd been working a 44-hour week in Dublin, which was 5/8 on a 4-hour day on a Saturday. But you had much more time off. And when I was in the country, that's what I was doing. Now, that convention came through, as I tell you. It wasn't a written agreement with the unions, but it was known by and agreed by the unions verbally. And that was what happened in the case of the plumbers. Now, different a bit of thing with other trades, but that's the idea was, well, we can't be sending these people off the country on the digs money usually wasn't adequate for the landlady. Now, the landladies were not overpaid, I can tell you that much, but it wasn't adequate for them, for the service they were providing, and you had to contribute something else yourself to them. But then outside of that, like, you know, well, as I say, what had been agreed was you could get paid for 60 hours, but you had to work 60 hours flat. Now, here am I considering all of this, not I'll jack up, you know, that was the expression used in the day, I'll jack up, nothing to do with me personally, but my name being Jack. But so anyway, came up to Dublin that weekend, as it happened, which is a rare enough thing when you run country work. And I was talking to my father, who had been an emigrant worker in Glasgow during the war, and he thought, he didn't like to see me going, so he said, look, go down to Spittle, Easter's coming off, you'll be home again then, I'll have a chat with you then. That's what I did. I went down to Spittle then, and here I'm in onto the building site with my tools. I got fixed up in a digs, which was the local pub in Spittle, as it happens, and then tools on the floor, and the next thing I hear people talking Irish on the building site. And then another pair of fellas talking Irish, and they're all talking Irish on the building site. And I thought, well, it hadn't even occurred to me then. I mean, I thought that would be just put in as an insulting remark when I was told that. So I'm listening to this, and after a week or two, I was assigned a mate who was about 16 years of age. And to tell the truth, looking back, I don't think his English was great, you know, that's because there were many people at that time in that part of the world who had been reared in Irish-speaking households, and they were anxious to learn English, but and most of them could speak pretty good English, but it wouldn't be as if it was their only language, you know, that sort of thing. But anyway, I tried to turn on Casper Mashdali, he handed me the hammer. Jeez, it works. I'd try something else and I'd try something else. Well, it wasn't long before I was saying to him, must mean that on Lerith to Gaigan and tell my father, Mashnally, will you speak Irish to me all the time, please? And I was talking Irish all around me. Indeed, by the time I got home after a fortnight, I was surprised. This is a credit to the school system. I had left school at 14 years of age, left primary school at 14 years of age, and if anyone asked me, I would have said, no, I can't talk Irish. But we had a lot of it. I even had a Tishil Genadach in my head, you know, the thing that I remember.
Ofic an Phrisht.
Yeah, Ofic an Phrisht. And I remember a minister saying on one occasion that they should abolish the Tishil Genadach from Irish, you know. Now, this is a fellow who never, I don't know, did he speak Irish at all, you know. He just learned a bit. The hostility to Irish was significant from people who didn't even know they were being hostile, you know. But I saw two young kids on the street in Spittle. Now, they were about 7 years of age or something. And one of them shouted at the other, you know, the kids would be sparring with each other, "Tur me barna broigit it," the Tishil Genadach for brogue, isn't it? You know, barna broigit. It's one boot, but it's not before it, yeah. And it's broigit. Yeah. "Tur me barna broigit it." Jeez, that's a Tishil Genadach, you know. And I understood it from my primary school education. And I understood a good bit more. So I had to think to myself and say, well, how am I going to learn this Irish thing? And said, well, the talking is the most important one if you can do that. But why not get a few books as well, you know, and do a bit of reading at the same time? And people were surprised at me that I could actually understand things like the Tishil Genadach, you know, about that. I was now about 23, was I, or something like that, you know, at the time. But that was it. And then at the end of the 6 months, I thought, now I'm going to have to tell them in Dublin. Now, we never telephoned at that time. You know, we didn't have telephones, and there was one telephone for the general foreman who wasn't even in your company, you know, in the office on the building site, but you never got to use that. And anyway, so I'll have to write them a letter and say, I'll be finishing this job next Wednesday. From then on, I'll be available for work. And I had this thought out in my head that I would reply to them in as terse a fashion as they had spoken. And I will accept work then either in Galway or in Dublin, otherwise regard this as notice of my termination of employment.
You wanted to stay there and immerse yourself in Irish.
Absolutely, that would have suited. That I wasn't going to tell them I preferred that to Dublin. I would have taken Dublin just as well, you know. No, I didn't think they'd have work there. And should a bus arrive down from Dublin, you know, Rinty Monaghan, his name is Monaghan, he used to be called after a boxer called Rinty Monaghan. He wasn't such a bad sort. He just never either smiled or said anything light at all when he was talking to what he would have thought of as subordinates. He'd been a plumber himself or a pipe fitter, you know, in his day. But anyway, this, and he comes down to me and his face cracks into a smile. He says, is it the language or the ladies? So it was the first human sort of thing I got from FKM Limited. We used to call the four kind men. It was Finlay, Kelly, Monaghan and Moore, but it was the four kind men was the way we described it. But anyway, I was then sent to Kearney, and he said, yeah, the job in Galway, it's on the Great Southern Hotel in Galway, and won't be starting for about 6 months. But he said, there's a job we can give you now in Kearney, but now that's about 20 miles further on or something like that, further into Connemara. And I said, no, I thought that's, you know, more certain of being Gaeltacht, you know. And I said, oh, I'll take that. So anyway, I went to Kearney, continued talking Irish there, you know, and they were great on the job in Kearney, everyone around me, except the Dubs who might be there, you know. I was probably there because I had skills like oxyacetylene welding and things like that that wouldn't have been so common. Plumbers in the west of Ireland hadn't yet got to the stage of doing that sort of skilled work, you know. Whereas we'd been doing it in Dublin for quite a while, you know.
Yeah.
And so that was it. And then I came into Galway City. And when I came into Galway City, most of the building workers on the job were from the Gaeltacht. They were employed by companies from the Gaeltacht. I was talking Irish on the building site there. So I was about 4 years around Galway, 4 or 5 years nearly, around Galway, speaking Irish. And ever since then, I felt it's fair enough. I describe myself as fluent in Irish, you know, that I could I'm an Irish speaker as well. I haven't got a word of it. These would be Dini who had been through secondary school in Irish as well. No, I haven't got a word of that. So I'd say, you know, where do you live? And they give it to me in Irish. And then I'd ask them simple things, they'd reply in Irish. And I'd say, no, say that in Chinese. And, you know, they wouldn't have a clue. So people who had Irish didn't know how much they had, because you move, as I had discovered, from not knowing or not speaking a language in particular, not speaking a language, to beginning to speak it. And then you're beginning to know, and you know it. But you could sometimes have a lot in your head, as I did from the age of 14, without even knowing I had it, you know. So that is a lesson I had learned. I keep trying to pass that lesson on to encourage people, you know, and to have a look. Like, people who wrote books on grammar and things like that, they're not stuffy people trying to... This isn't about, what do they call it in English, or whether to teach the young ladies...
Etiquette or elocution.
That's not what grammar books are. Grammar books are telling you about the essence of the language, and they give you keys for remembering. Even though they don't say, we are now going to give you a key, but they give you keys if you think of it for a while. And, you know, here I could look at the two kids fighting, saying Barna Brog, and I'd say Brog, noun of the second declension, B-R-O for the G-A for the plural, Broga. But the genitive case, if it's bar na, it's B-R-O for the I-G-E, and you slenderize the last consonant. Now that's, I'm particularly saying that in the grammatical way. Why wouldn't you try to learn that if you're trying to learn a language? You know, that's, I wish it was as good.
The beauty of the language.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And to have someone come along and a minister for government saying we should abolish the Tishal Genedic, the absurdity of it.
Yeah, yeah. There was a cartoonist back in the 60s called Flannery Rian.
That's right. Yes, yeah, great character.
And how you doing?
Hello, sorry for interrupting. Would you like a cup of tea yet?
Yes.
Yes, please, yeah. Thank you. Thanks, Anita. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, Flannery Rian.
Yes. I think he wrote a book called Irish for Lazy People.
Did he?
I thought it was a fantastic title.
Yes.
And it would be a bestseller if somebody brought out a book for people that were just a little bit, you know, they'd love to learn the Irish, but
Great help. And I'd say coming from Flannery Rian in particular would be, because his Irish was very good. This is a way of trying to... We know from almost learning everything that to have a general background to what you're trying to say or do means a lot. And that's what grammar is, you know. So I never thought of grammar as elocution or anything, you know. And from what I learned about grammar in Irish helped me to understand the grammar of English. And, you know, I was better able to write in English than I could before I learned the grammar of Irish and understood it. So I was certainly by then standing back at it, looking at it and saying, oh, that's that. And then I went to learn French and, you know, les verbes en français, c'est très, très irrégulier et c'est très, très difficile pour moi. Parce que je suis un anglophone. Okay, I'm just saying that to show you that I have a bit of French as well.
That's Jack Gannon. Very enjoyable conversation with himself and Ita Gannon and their little baby grandson, and full of beans. Anyway, I hope to have more conversation that I recorded with Jack and Ita next week, talking about a strike. I think it was a plumber strike back around 1964, 9 weeks, and they won the right for a 40-hour week. So, very interesting man, full of learning, fluent in Irish. And we follow that up with a lovely song by another man who lives around Broadstone, Martin Hansard. And Martin also went down to Galway for about 6 months. Shinnanocker, Martin told me, that's the way to learn the Irish. just go down and live in the Gaeltacht for 6 months. This is a song that Martin wrote called Lig de Ski.
Okay.